A large portion of last year's economic stimulus package still hasn't been spent. In New Hampshire alone, about $100 million stimulus dollars will go toward local projects by this fall. But as New Hampshire Public Radio's John Greenberg reports, even that flood of money is unlikely to provide the economic turnaround the public wants.
If you want to trace the flow of stimulus money in New Hampshire, start at Jacqueline Doyen's house in Manchester.
Thank you for coming.
The elderly widow's immaculate home is the set piece for a weatherization party. A new furnace, high-efficiency light bulbs, and fresh insulation have cut her energy bills almost in half, all thanks to programs funded by the economic stimulus. In addition to helping people of modest means like Jacqueline Doyen, the program helps small contractors like Melissa and Robert Warshall. They own Warshall Insulation, which did the work on this house. Late last year, things began to kick into high gear.
There was just a stack of jobs waiting for us, and it's been consistent ever since.
With so much work coming from the stimulus, the Warshalls did what the Obama administration hoped. They expanded.
We ended up buying another truck, and we hired two more full-time employees.
One of those new hires is 22-year-old Adam Baker. The job could not have come at a better time for Baker and his girlfriend.
I'm actually expecting a child in November, so we just found out on Wednesday, actually, and I'm trying to put a lot of money aside for him.
Infrastructure spending from the stimulus is not new. What's new is the number of big projects finally getting underway. About $100 million worth will hit the Granite State's economy between now and the fall. That will produce a lot of jobs, and each one will generate more jobs as people buy groceries and clothes and so on. As it turns out, Adam Baker's family owns Newfound Grocery Restaurant and Deli in New Hampshire's Lakes region. We stopped by to visit his mother, Holly Kerouac. Many of the goods on the shelves are locally made. You can buy everything from T-shirts to everyday food.
Everybody seems to think you have to go to the big grocery store to get a deal on meat. We grind every day. I have to go grind in a few minutes. It's certified Angus. It's the same price as you can find at Hannaford, Shaw's, all the big deals.
Even Kerouac got a boost from the stimulus. The act paid for energy auditors and low-interest loans to install new energy-efficient lighting.
So that's going to help pay for itself, and they've figured less than 8 months.
Even though this summer is the best she's had in 2 years, Kerouac remains anxious. Too many local businesses have shut down. Too many middle-aged workers have no prospects for work. Although the stimulus helped her son get a job and paid to improve her business, Kerouac feels it hasn't filtered down to the average worker or small business. That said, her sense of what's in the stimulus remains murky.
I think a lot of people aren't educated on it, myself included. You have to really be involved in it to understand just how far it does go.
Economist Russ Tebow with Applied Economics estimates that between direct and indirect spending, the latest bolt of cash will generate at least another 4,000 jobs in the state.
But you have to put it in the context of 50,000 people in New Hampshire being unemployed right now. So it's helpful, but it's not going to solve our problem.
So long as many people here share that conclusion, the stimulus will continue to disappoint. For NPR News, I'm John Greenberg in Concord, New Hampshire.
Here in Washington, the Senate has given up an effort to pass a bill that would have strengthened offshore drilling safety. That was one measure in an energy bill that Democratic leaders supported. Majority Leader Harry Reid says he doesn't have 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. In the coming months, Congress will face pressure to act on another issue. The tax cuts enacted during President Bush's administration expire at the end of this year. The question is whether to extend those tax cuts or let them go. NPR's Jim Zeroli reports.
During his 8 years in office, President George W. Bush was an ardent tax cutter, slashing taxes on income, capital gains and dividends, and inherited property.
Tax relief or tax reform, however you want to describe it, is part of my judgment of creating economic vitality.
But to make the budget numbers work, the Republicans who controlled Congress had to agree to make their tax cuts temporary. Now, years later, these cuts are set to expire, and the question of what to do about them is threatening to dominate the fall election season. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says at a time when the economy remains fragile, letting the tax cuts expire would be a huge mistake.
This is about tax increases in the middle of what most Americans believe is a recession.
There are plenty of economists who support that view, people like Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com. Zandi, whose support for the Obama stimulus plan has been widely touted by Democrats, says it's okay to let the tax cuts expire later on, but not now.
I think it would be an error to allow tax rates to rise for anyone come January 1st, 2011. I think the recovery is just too fragile, and the cost to taxpayers would be very serious.
The Obama administration agrees, to a point. The president is on record as wanting to keep some of the tax cuts in place, just not those aimed at high-income Americans. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was interviewed about the subject on ABC's Good Morning America yesterday.
If you extend, particularly these tax cuts that only go to 2% of the highest earning Americans, then there would be a much higher probability they'll be extended indefinitely, and that would add $700 billion to our 10-year deficits. That would be a deeply fiscally irresponsible act.
Many Democrats say Republicans are hypocritical, advocating tax cuts for high-income Americans while also expressing concern about the deficit. Republicans reply that higher taxes on income hurt small business owners who create a lot of the new jobs the economy needs. Many entrepreneurs operate S corporations, which means their business profits are taxed as personal income. But William Gale of the Brookings Institution says that's something of an exaggeration. He says few small businesses make enough net income to fall into the highest tax brackets.
Raising the tax rate by 3 or 4 percentage points in the top two tax brackets, I mean, do we really think that's going to drive business to its knees?
As the debate heats up, some influential players in the economy are taking sides. Here was James Bullard, the president of the St. Louis Federal Reserve, on CNBC last week.
Increasing taxes when you're trying to get the economy to recover is not a good plan.
But former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan disagrees. With a federal deficit soaring, he now believes the tax cuts should be allowed to lapse.
I'm very much in favor of tax cuts, but not with borrowed money.
Greenspan's remarks on NBC's Meet the Press this weekend were especially significant. The former Fed chairman lent tacit support to the Bush tax cuts almost a decade ago. Now, public concern about the budget deficit is higher than ever, and making the case for tax cuts has become more complicated. But with the economy so fragile, letting the tax cuts lapse is risky, too. As Congress prepares to debate the Bush tax cuts, it's finding itself without any good options. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Blanc.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Many economists say the U.S. won't fully recover from the recession until the housing market recovers. But the number of homeowners facing foreclosure continues to rise. And as NPR's Anthony Brooks reports, the foreclosure crisis is now deepening in states like Massachusetts, places that were initially spared the worst of the real estate collapse.
Paul Collier is an attorney in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who represents homeowners facing foreclosure. Collier says these days he's busier than ever.
The financial conditions that created this meltdown and the legal conditions that created the meltdown are still there.
Last month, banks took more than 1,300 Massachusetts homes, more than double the rate of the same period last year. That according to Timothy Warren, CEO of the Warren Group, who tracks real estate in Massachusetts.
Foreclosures are at high levels right now. People are entering foreclosure at a very high rate. And, you know, that indicates a certain level of economic distress and that we're probably going to be facing that for some period of time.
The historically high foreclosure rates are due in part to banks working extra hard to get those non-performing loans off their books. In other words, they want to close out the bad loans and resell the homes to people who can afford them. Beyond that, Aaron Gornstein, who heads an affordable housing advocacy group in Boston, says the unemployment rate remains stubbornly high.
People are losing their jobs or have reduced work hours. We have a lot of people in the construction trades that are unemployed, close to 40%. So those people are falling behind in their mortgage. They can't keep up. And as a result, they're going into foreclosure.
Joel Searby agrees and says the high foreclosure rate has more to do with a tough economy than with a fallout from the subprime mortgage crisis. Searby is with a Florida research company that polled 500 Pennsylvanians who lost their homes to foreclosure and asked them why.
41% had a prime fixed loan, while only 8% had a subprime adjustable loan.
The most significant finding is that those experiencing foreclosure experienced job loss in a combination. That is, they didn't just simply lose their job. They lost their job and then something else happened.
Something like medical bills, divorce, or a relative moving in. He says the message is that foreclosures are tied more closely to bad economic conditions than to the type of loan. Searby says he found the same results in Florida and Nevada, two states hit the hardest by the real estate crisis. According to a recent RealtyTrack report, in the first half of this year, the number of foreclosures went up in three-quarters of the largest U.S. metropolitan areas compared with a year ago.
And until we do something about it, we are going to be unable to resolve the current economic crisis.
Again, Cambridge attorney Paul Collier. He says foreclosures not only hurt millions of individual homeowners, they destabilize neighborhoods and drag down housing prices. Collier says federal initiatives that encourage banks to rework loans and avoid foreclosures are too weak because they're basically voluntary. But he says it doesn't have to be that way. Collier points out that in the wake of the 1930s depression, some states enacted tough measures to compel banks to lower monthly payments, and that dramatically reduced foreclosures.
States like Kansas and Iowa simply adopted mandatory mediation. That is, every lender had to sit in a room with a professional mediator and a homeowner and discuss modification of that loan. And foreclosures went down within 20 months of the passage of that bill by 94%.
In the absence of that kind of legislation, it might help if more Americans facing foreclosure knew about state and federal programs that could help them, programs that provide incentives to rework loans and lower monthly payments. But Joel Searby, who did the polling on those facing foreclosure in Pennsylvania, found that a majority of those surveyed didn't know how or where to get help.
There's no doubt that there's been a disconnect between what the federal government and state governments have been offering and what these folks who are experiencing foreclosure are needing.
So until that changes, or until the economy dramatically improves, the number of foreclosures will likely continue to rise in the months ahead. Anthony Brooks, NPR News.
From notebooks and pens to new clothes and shoes, this weekend nearly a dozen states will suspend taxes on back-to-school supplies. These sales tax holidays are popular with store owners and shoppers, but with states across the nation mired in debt, critics say the tax breaks are harmful gimmicks. NPR's Carolyn Beeler reports.
Jared Lowry is a manager at Pacers Running Shoe Store in Arlington, Virginia.
You know, we'll definitely display some on our windows here.
Lowry is pointing out where he's going to hang signs for this weekend's tax holiday. Starting Friday, Virginia will suspend sales tax on school supplies and shoes and clothing that costs $100 or less.
As far as in the store, we'll probably put a sign like right when you walk in here, as you can see.
Everything in the store will be tax-free this weekend. Running shoes, water bottles, workout clothing. The store will foot the bill for any tax the state doesn't waive, all to encourage people to buy. Last year, the store saw about a 20% boost in sales during the tax-free weekend.
We think it's a good thing. On certainly a big purchase item, it will make a big difference, and it can even help bring in new customers to our store.
The owners of a nearby camping store just hung a sign on their front door advertising the tax holiday. Shopper Gabriella Montell likes the idea of a tax break.
I didn't know about the sales tax holiday, but now that I do, I might go shopping with my kids.
She's planning on picking up clothes for her daughter, who's in kindergarten.
I think it's great. It's always nice to save money, and of course, money's tighter because of the recession.
Consumers like the tax breaks, so they're an easy win for politicians, too. At a law signing ceremony last month, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn was enthusiastic about his state's first sales tax holiday.
It's designed to get our consumers in Illinois back into the marketplace, back into shopping, back into having confidence in our economy.
Illinois is facing a $13 billion budget deficit, and Governor Quinn has faced criticism for signing a law that could worsen that deficit. But the governor says he's hoping the tax holiday will actually increase state revenue.
We have great hopes that this will produce a revenue surplus, because when people come into the marketplace to buy school supplies, they may find other items that are non-exempt that they want to buy.
The National Retail Federation supports tax holidays. They say they're good at drawing customers into stores during a recession. But many analysts say the tax holidays are ineffective. Nicholas Johnson is with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a research group that focuses on how fiscal policy affects low- and middle-income Americans.
What the evidence shows is that sales tax holidays cause people to shift their spending, not to increase it. So there's no increase in retail sales consumption.
Johnson says there's a decrease in state revenues. And for many states, that's a loss they can't afford right now.
States are facing the biggest budget shortfalls in history, and this is an additional cost to them. They're a gimmick that costs states funds that they otherwise could be using for education, for health care, for transportation, and for the other core services.
This year, Georgia canceled its tax holiday. Still, more than a third of states do have sales tax holidays in 2010. But people on all sides of the issue agree. A few days or weeks of tax-free shopping have a relatively small effect overall. What retailers and state budgets alike really need is long-term economic recovery. Carolyn Beeler, NPR News, Washington.